Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Mem Vav. We're a little bit behind. Let's make our way to catch up. It's a pretty relatively straightforward daf today in Erevin. So we have a good opportunity to make ground. We are on the Mishnah on Mem Hamad Aleph. There are two Mishnahs, but the first Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud on Mem Hamad Aleph. Mishiyasha Baderech, the Amud Vera. So a person's traveling and he's not making it to town before Shabbos, and a little despair, a little yayush, and so he figures, okay, this is it. And he's got a backpack, he's got food, he'll survive. But in other words, this is it. I'm not going to have a tchum of that belongs to any city. I'm basically going to be on a halachic island. I'm here and I'm here to stay. So. So he sits down, he takes out his little roll, he makes Kiddush, okay. And then, a little bit later that evening, he looks up and he notices, oh no, I'm right next to a city, I didn't realize it. I'm sitting right next to a city. So here's the issue. The issue is that while he sat down and while he made Kiddush and during the Menach Moshe's period, so he did not realize that he was within proximity of a city. And so his kavana was, this is going to be my Makom Shvisa. So now, basically, with regret, filled with regret, can he now later on that say, had I known that I was next to a city, I obviously would have thrown my Makom Shvisa, my point of center, to the city. The Mishnah says, no, you can't, it's too late. Mishi Yashav B'derech V'amad V'raha Rehu Samach Le'ir, Hol V'lo Haisa Kavanas L'Kach, Lo Yikanes, Diver Abner. So Abner says he can't go in because he didn't know that the city was there, so that wasn't his kavana. Rav Yehuda Amar Yikanes. So, and Rav Yehuda says, that's not true. In other words, he can go into the city. Meaning, we're going to forecast that had he known that he was within proximity of the city, of course he would have moved his Makom Shvisa to the city. By the way, there is an assumption in this Gemara, which I'm not sure if we made clear up until this point in time. Your Makom Shvisa doesn't have to be directly below your feet. Meaning, and we're going to make this point clear as we go on in the Masechta. If you see a particular area and it's within 2,000 amas of you, you could throw, it's like throwing your voice, you could throw your Makom Shvisa to that area. So if you're within 2,000 amas of a city, you for sure can throw your Makom Shvisa to that city. This person didn't know he was within proximity of the city. It was just like right over the next bend. He didn't know. So according to Rebbe Meir, he's stuck. And according to Rebbe Yehuda, no, he's not. He can actually just walk right into the city.
Why can't he walk in at least to this?
But in other words, he's still going to be circumscribed within his tchum, where he established to be his Makom Shvisa. According to Rav Yehuda, if he wants to make the city his Makom Shvisa, he may do so even after the fact. I'm Rav Yehuda, my Hayav Nichlas, Rabbi Tafram, Balom is Kavin. And Rav Yehuda says, look, I have empirical proof. Rebbe Tarfon, actually, there was an episode where this happened to Rebbe Tarfon, and Rebbe Tarfon walked right into the city. Meaning, going into Shabbos during the Benosh Mashas period, he did not know that he was right next to a city. Then later that evening, he made the discovery, oh no, I'm within proximity of a city. And so what did he do? He just walked right into the city. So I'm right. So the Gemara starts off, Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Maisa Rabbi Tarfon Shayamalach be Derech ve Chashcha lo ve Lan Chutz La'ir. So the Gemara brings a Braisa. The Braisa just tells the story with a little more detail. He went to bed that night, right? He was outside the city. He didn't even know there was a city next to him. He assumed this was going to be my Makom Shvisa. He actually slept outside that night. L'shachris matzo roi bakar. And then Shachris came and he was awoken by shepherds and sheep. And what are you guys doing here? So Amar lo Rebbe harei ha'ir lefanecha. So the shepherds say, what do you mean? The city's right here. Meaning, just go over one more mountaintop and you'll see. City is right there. It's within Tchum. So, So he went into the city, and it is Rabbi Tarfon. So he went to the Beis Medrash, and he darshan in the Beis Medrash. So that is a proof, Rabbi Yehuda's offering, that it's okay, meaning even though during the Benosh Mashas period, you didn't know you were within proximity of the city, but nevertheless, the assumption is had you have known, you would have made the city your Makom Shvisa. So that is Rav Yehuda's proof. Now, Rav Meir, remember, he disagreed. And Rav Meir says, you can't. And so what's Rav Meir going to do with this story? So first thing Rav Meir could do with this story is say, I disagree. But Rav Meir says, you look, we don't even have to say that. Meaning, I don't even think you're right about your conclusion from the story. Misham Raya, Shema Beliba Haisa, all base measures move la b'soch tumah haya. First of all, there are two arguments you can make. And look, I'm not going to even discard the story. The story's right. But A, first of all, it could very well be that he knew about the city and he forecasted during the Bein HaShemeshes period that my Makom Shvi'is is going to be in the city. Why did he walk to the city that night? Why did he wait till the next morning? He was tired. Okay. Right? he's an outdoor guy. Okay, that's number one. Number two, as Phil pointed out just a moment ago, and he's absolutely correct, meaning he could walk into the city, it's just, in other words, but he's limited to his tchum. He's tethered to his makom shvisa. It could very well be that the base measure that he was sitting in is still within his makom shvisa that he set up outside the city. So in other words, the story may be correct. The conclusion from the story, however, Reb Meir is going to argue with Reb Yehuda, is not correct. The next Mishnah, we're on the bottom of Mem Hey and Aleph. Misha yasham bedech v'lo yada shechashecha. Yesh l'apayim l'chol ruach div Reb Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay, so now we get onto the following discussion. So previously we were talking about where a person was within proximity of a city, he just didn't know about it. Here, he wasn't even awake. Right, traveling, he's exhausted, and he's literally on the road. He doesn't know, there's not even a city around. And finally, during the Bein HaShemeshes period, he couldn't even stay up. So in other words, he was fast asleep. Now, how do you acquire your Makom Shvisa? The answer is, with das. It's like any kinyan. So in other words, when you make any type of transaction, there has to be a mindset. You have to be of a state of mind. This person, during the Bein HaShemeshes period, was fast asleep. He didn't even have a state of mind to be Kona's Makom Shvisa. So Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, it's okay. In other words, where he is right now, where he fell asleep, that's going to be his Makom Shvisa. He didn't make a conscious kinyan. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, that's fine. That's not a big deal. And we'll discuss why in just a moment. So, Yesh l'apayim l'chol ruach. Div Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. V'chachamim omrim, ein lo ela arba amos. Now, but here's a more interesting position. Okay, we don't. In this regard, we're going to follow like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. We'll get to that in just a moment. But here's certainly the more interesting position. And the majority position, which is, no, you get nothing. Well, not nothing, but you only get Dalet Amos. You do not get 2,000 Amos. 2,000 Amos is somebody whose Kona is Makom Shvisa. This person over here, because he was sleeping during the Bein HaShemeshes period, is not Kona a Makom Shvisa. So in other words, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have a Makom Shvisa. He doesn't have the 2,000 Amos going in every direction. He does not have it. Therefore, what does he have? What everybody has, which is Dalet Amos. But that's it. And no more than that. So it's very interesting. In other words, basically the way the Chachamim are looking at acquiring a Makom Shvisa is that it's a real acquisition. And like any Kenyan, there has to be Das, there has to be a mindset. The person who's sleeping obviously doesn't have Das. Rabbi Lazar Omer v'hu be'emtzah. Now, the Gemara is going to fine-tune the position of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say this person has Dal Amos. What exactly does that mean? That I have four Amos. Four Amos? Is not a lot. Somewhere between 6 to 8 feet. Okay? The table? No. Maybe the table and these two desks. That's it. That's all I got in terms of my Dalet Amos. So, Rebbe Lazar is of the position, I find myself right in the center of the Dalet Amos. So, in other words, on Shabbos, my leg room, so to say, is two Amos in every direction. That's it. That's my leg room. Okay, it's better than a plane, but and it's not a lot, obviously. So Rav Yehuda Omer La'ezev Ruach Sheyirtzeh Yelech. Now Rav Yehuda disagrees. He says, no, you do have four Amos, but you can decide where the beginning and the end of those four Amos are. Nahainu, if you want the four Amos to be north of where you are, good. So you'll be at the southern extreme of those four Amos. Or you could basically put it wherever four Amos, wherever you want, obviously with you being at some end of the four Amos. So you have that kind of latitude. Rav Yehuda, I'm sorry. Umod Rav Yehuda, Shimbir Alo, Shenir Cholachzebo. But Rav Yehuda will agree to this. You can't shift it around. Meaning, once you make a decision, a determination of where your four amos are going to be, that's your four amos. You can't then say, oh, you know what? I don't want the four amos north of where I am. I want the four amos south of where I am. And basically now that'll give you eight amos of latitude. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that you can do. It's just not like Rabbi Eliezer where you're automatically centered at the middle of the four amos, but rather you can decide four amos to the north, four amos to the south. That kind of latitude you do have. A really bizarre case, a case which is so hard to imagine that would actually happen, but what if? What if I had two people who neither of them had tchum, okay, each one of them only had four amos, and of their four amos, one encroached into the other. So there's a bit of overlap between these two people who now find themselves for that Shabbos limited and really restricted to only their four amos. But they kind of are overlapping one over the other. So the Mishnah discusses this scenario. So, Mivin v'ochlim b'emsa. At least they can dine together. So in the area of overlap, so what they could do now is, I don't know if they have a table, who knows what they have, but in the area of overlap, what they could do now is they can sit together, have a meal between the two of them, share some food together, not a problem. Now, mind you, let's just, for a moment, let's think about this in terms of dining together. What's the big deal? The big deal is that once you're restricted to your four amos, so is all your possessions. Meaning, you cannot move out of your four amos, neither can any of your possessions. So if you have, let's say, food, so you can't go out four amos, and your food can't go out four amos as well. So the point that the Mishnah is making is that as long as there's an area of overlap, so now we can dine in that area of overlap, and we can share food, because my food's not going to be exiting my four amos, and his food is not going to be exiting his four amos because of the existing overlap between us. And the only thing, of course, that's a Mishnah, is that I can't take any of his items and bring it out of his four amos into my four amos. That I can't do. All the food has to remain in the overlapped area. Okay. Hi, you shlosha.
Does food have that? Do we apply the same concept that the food gets its own tichum? Does food get its own four amos also?
It sounds that way. Meaning, I do understand your question. From the discussion in this Mishnah, it certainly sounds that way. Then the Mishnah discusses a case which is even more improbable. Let's say there are three of them. Three people who, for whatever reason, don't have Tchum Shabbos. And now all they got is their four amos. And now these three people in a row are sitting down and, they're talking to one another. They got a lot of time to kill. They got an entire Shabbos in the middle of nowhere. And each one of them only has four amos. And now, what's the story where they're eating? And here, just to set up the scenario, the one person who is in the middle, so he encroaches on the guy to his right. He encroaches on the guy to the left. But the two outer guys have no overlap for each other. So now this guy in the middle, he's going to be our social butterfly. He's going to be the guy who can turn to the right and say, let's sit, let's eat together. He can turn to the guy on the left and he can do the same. But now the guy in the extremities, they can talk to one another. That little they can do. But in terms of sharing a meal, in terms of bringing something to the center, that they can't do because there's literally no overlap between our two outer guys. And the Mishnah just simply spells this out. Now, Reb Shimon says, can I give you an analogy? Now, usually in an analogy, things get easier. Meaning, we're gonna give you a scenario in which it's an easier scenario, and now you're going to say to yourself, oh good, now I understand the more complex scenario. That's usually how analogies work. Here, if I may say, Rabbi Shimon's analogy is going to be unbelievably complex, and our original discussion is going to seem like a cakewalk compared to Rabbi Shimon's analogy. But analogies are as they are. L'maha davadoma, can I make a comparison? Shosh chatzeros ha-psuchos u-lazu, psuchos u-rishos ha-rabim. Let's say I have three chatzeros, which are, again, in a row. And each one of them are open to one another. There's a Pesach. There's an entrance from getting from Chatzar A to B, Chatzar B to C. If someone wants to go from A to C, so what he's going to do? He's going to cut through. He'll walk from A to B and from B to C. But in other words, there's no access from A to C. There's no direct access from A to C. And oh, by the way, all three of them are abutting a Rishus HaRabim. All three of them have an entrance to a Rishus HaRabim as well. Now, we're going to learn later on, when we get back to Erev Chatzeros, we still have the fourth parak for Erev Tchum, we have the fifth parak of Erev Tchum, and then when we get to the sixth parak, we'll talk Chatzeros. Okay? But we will talk then, that if I have two Chatzeros that are next to one another, and there's a Pesach opening up one to the other, story goes like this. They can make individual Eruvim, they can make a singular Eruv. It's up to them. They have that kind of discretion. So, three chatzeros, each one is open to the other, except again, A does not have a direct opening to C. So, Eruvu Shtayim Imayim Tzais, let's now imagine that the two outer ones are making an Eruv chatzeros with the inner one. Again, they have the option. They didn't have to, but they have an option. So A made an Eruv with B. And B made an Eruv with C, but A and C didn't make an Eruv together. So A and B are unified. B and C are unified, but A and C are not unified. So So now, if I want to carry, I can carry an item from Chatzar A to B. I can carry an item from Chatzar B to C. I can't carry an item from Chatzar A to C. Good. And Rabbi Shimon says, now you know that case. It's the same as our case over here regarding our three people who don't have a Tchum Shabbos. Each one of them only has Dalai Amos. A is encroaching on B. B is encroaching on C, but A is not encroaching on C. So A can carry to B. B can carry to C. Not carry, but in other words, a share the mutually shared area. Right, sit down and enjoy food in that overlapped area, but they can't eat with C. So Rabbi Shimon says it's the same as our analogy of the chatzeros. Gemara Tamar's daf. We're going to talk about what do we gain from that analogy? Right. Meaning we kind of understood it even before the analogy, and okay, so that's going to be a discussion. We'll talk more about that in tomorrow's daf. I actually mean Mem Zayin, not Mem Vav. I'm hoping we'll get through Mem Vav today. By Rav Amikas of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, we get to explore today the position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. What is behind his position? Again, we're going back now to the sleeping, to the person who slept a little too early. Okay, in other words, he's walking on Shabbos, he's on the road, he's traveling, and then he falls asleep before Bein Hashmashos. And he's sleeping during the entirety of the Bein Hashmashos period. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says he's fine. He's got a makom shvisa, and he has now tchum. And the chachamim disagree with Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and say, no, he's not. He wasn't going to makom shvisa. He doesn't have tchum. He doesn't have 2,000 amas in every direction. All he has is 4 amas. So today, an entire day, starting now, discussing, analyzing the position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and a good part of today is the idea that we're paskening like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, even though he's a das yachid. So the discussion starts off first with an analysis by Rav Amai Kasavar Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Mizbar Kasavar Chavte Hefka Kodesh Shvisa. So first of all, maybe it could be the following. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's a human being. Meaning, let's say it was an inanimate object. Inanimate objects that are ownerless, according to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, acquire where they started Shabbos. Meaning, everything has Tchum. People have Tchum. Objects have tchum. But by objects, most of the time, it's a no-brainer. Because the objects are owned by a person. So what's the tchum of the object? Its owner. Whatever the tchum of its owner is, that will define what the tchum of that object is going to be as well. What about cheftze hefker? What about ownerless items? So Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, they also acquire. What do they acquire? Wherever they are. Now, obviously, there's no das by an inanimate object. Obviously. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri obviously believes that's not a prerequisite. Meaning just simply the fact that they're there is going to be the fact that they're kohen the makom shvisa. So if that's true by a bicycle, by an ownerless bicycle where it's kohen makom shvisa, so a sleeping human being also will be kohen makom shvisa. So maybe that's what's behind Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Now, truth be told, is that our Mishnah didn't have to be talking about a sleeping human being. Our Mishnah could have been discussing a bicycle, right? Could be. And the truth of the matter is that the topic of our mission could have been bicycles, but really what our mission wanted to show us is the strength of the Chachamim's position. The Chachamim are arguing with Rav Yochanan ben Nuri not only on the bicycle, but on a human being as well. If that human is not awake, he's not going as Makam Shvisa. And that's a much bigger Chiddush. Because he could have argued, look, he's a human being. He could be conscious right now. He's sleeping. In other words, can't we make a distinction between a human who's sleeping and a bicycle? And the point is that the Chachamim are going to say, no, we don't see a difference. Because according to the Chachamim, you actually have to acquire your Makam Shvisa. And acquisition, kinyanim, require das.
So you have to have your objects in mind.
No, so in other words, if you're awake, so you're going to be kona you and your objects by default. But if you're sleeping, you literally have no das. You can't make any type of kinyan while you're sleeping. You can't acquire anything while you're sleeping. And the Chachamim will say the same thing is true with your makom shvisa. Or we could say the following: the Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says that by ownerless items they do not acquire the makom shvisa. The bicycle does not acquire its makom shvisa. Here, however, we're talking about a human being. He has the potential of being awake, so therefore, even though he's sleeping, it's with that latent potential of him being able to be awake and be able to be kohen as makom shvisa. So we're going to say, even as a sleeping person, he's going to be kohen as makom shvisa. That could be the what's behind the position of Yochanan ben Nuri. I'm Rav Yosef Tashma. So Rav Yosef says, I know the answer. Because I know Brisos. Remember, Rav Yosef is Sinai, right? He knows things. He knows Mishnayos, he knows Brisos. He says, look, I know a Brisa. Kshamim sheyardu me'erev yom tov yesh lema paimam l'chol ruach. Let's say it rains. Okay? Now, I have rainwater. Now, if it fell on Erev Yontov, so it has 2,000 amas in every direction. Okay? Meaning, okay, who owned the rainwater? Right now, nobody. It fell before Yontif. It collected in some sort of pit. It's owned by anybody. I'm sorry. It's ownerless. Apologize. It's ownerless. So therefore, 2,000 amas in any direction from wherever it fell. Okay, whose position is that? I mean, you already know the answer. That's Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. And obviously, so we're talking about rainwater. That's an object. That's not a person. It's not a sleeping person. Be Yontif harein karegle karagle kol adam. Now, if the rain falls on water, karagli kol adam. Okay, now, wait 1 second, I'll explain that second statement of the Braisa, but first things first. Look, if Rav Yochanan ben Nuri's position is not just limited to sleeping people, but it also includes objects as well, I understand the Braisa. But if you say that Rav Yochanan's position is only limited to sleeping people, who's the author of this Braisa? It's certainly not the Chachamim. They require a person to be awake. The only thing we're left to say is that's Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and that his position is, not only does a sleeping person kone as makom shvisa, but so does objects as well. Ownerless items. Yasiv Abai Vikamala Lash my Tamale Rav Safala by the Dhamma Bhikshama Masmukham Liraskinan Vanche Oso Ir Data Malayo. Now look, if all we have is this Brisa, can we make the following argument? Maybe the Brisa is talking about where the rain was in within proximity of the city. And before Yantav, a person's das was on the rain. So in other words, we don't have to say that the Brisa is talking about ownerless rain. So Amrle Lo Sakadakh says no, that's not correct. Meaning that's not a plausible way to explain the Braisa. How do I know that? Did not, because look at the following. Bor shal yachid karag le yachid. Let's say I have a pit that belongs to a particular individual. All the water in that pit is like its owner, meaning follows the same tchum as the owner. Vishal osto yir karag le osto yir. Let's say you have a body of water that's owned by a city. What's the tchum of that body of the water? The same tchum as that city. Vishal ole bavel. But let's say I have pits on Ole for Ole Bavel, those people who are walking to Eretz Yisrael. pizza put on the road. Who owns them? Nobody. So come Yontif, when you draw water from it, whose tchum is it going to follow? Whoever picks it up. So karagle hamamale. Vitanya, that's one brisa. Okay, hold on to that thought. Now we have another brisa. I have a pit. It belongs to the public. What is its tchum? 2,000 amas of wherever it is. Okay? So, stira, kashen adade. Meaning, the first brisa says that ole bavel follows whoever picks it up. Meaning, it does not have its own makam shvisa. It was not kon its own makam shvisa. Whoever picks it up, that's the tchum it's going to follow. Second brisa says, no. Water of the shvatim, which as Rashi points out, it's the same thing. Meaning, it's ownerless. So, whose tchum does it follow? Its own tchum. So, Ela Lav Shmamina, HaRav Yochanan, Nuri HaRabbanan. So, in other words, these two brises are reflecting, one, the position of the Chachamim, two, the position of Yochanan Nuri. According to the Chachamim, ownerless items don't have tchum. According to Rav Yochanan, ownerless items do have tchum. What is its tchum? Wherever it starts off Shabbos. Now we go back to the brisa that talks about the rain falling down on Erev Yontif. What tchum does it have? The brisa says, wherever it falls, that's what its tchum is going to be. That brisa falls like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. So now we have basically concluded that Rav Yochanan ben Nuri's position is not based on the fact that it's a sleeping person, but based on the fact that cheftzei hefker kona makom shvisa, that even ownerless items, inanimate objects, are going to acquire the makom shvisa. So they went to Rav Yosef and they said, you know, this was a give and take, meaning we were defending you, Rav Yosef. Rav Safra said this, but this is how they answered. Amar Leis, Rav Yosef said, look, thanks so much. I really appreciate you defending my position. But, look, you didn't need to go to the two brises, Borshal Yachid, Borshal Rabim, and note the stira. Meaning, all you needed was that first brisa regarding the rainwater and the clouds. And right there, you know I'm right. Because look, because you suggested maybe the rain is right next to the city. Just the wording of the brisa indicates that I'm correct. Because the brisa says they have 2,000 amas in every direction. If you're right that it's rain next to the city, the people in the city have their mind on it, so it shouldn't be 2,000 amas in every direction, but karagle anshe osa ha'ir. That's how the brisa should have ended off, like the people of the city. So you know that that's not the case of the brisa, where the rain was falling right next to the city. You know I'm right. My understanding of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri is correct. It's not because it's a sleeping person, but it's because cheftzei hefker, ownerless items are kona their makom shvisa. Amar mar beyom tov harein karegle kol adam. The rain falls on Yontif. Second half of the brisa, I told you, we're going to explain it. Here we do. The amaylik ne shvisa beukainos. The Gemara now wonders. Now, the Gemara knows that rainwater is evaporated ocean water. Now, from the Gemara's perspective, there was only one ocean. Okay. By the way, the word okainos, that's ocean. Okay. It ever bothered you that the word ocean is spelled with a C? Okean. Okay, Okeanos. So they only knew of one ocean, Mediterranean, maybe you want to argue the Atlantic, or whatever, doesn't even matter. For this discussion, doesn't matter. The point is as follows, that they know that, how does rain work? Okay, water gets evaporated from the ocean, hangs out in the clouds, and then precipitation. Good. So, but from a halachic standpoint, what does that mean? That all rain in the clouds really start in the ocean. So, if it rained on Yontif, now I understand, look, I don't know enough about the weather patterns to know how long this process takes, but the point the Gemara is making is as follows. Where did all of it start? In the ocean. So where was its makom shvisa? In the ocean. So now it goes to the clouds and it comes down now. So how can you say karagle kol adam?
Two questions. You say the ocean. First of all, is in the ocean in Carmelite?
Again, we had versions of this discussion earlier, meaning it is, but regarding tchum, tchum is a geographic location. So wherever it is, it is.
And the thing is that a drop of water, isn't it nullified in the ocean? So
it's part of the... Okay, hold that thought. That's the Gemara is going to kind of address that, but yeah, hold that thought. So Likne Shvisa, but kindness. Lema de lo Rabbi Elazar, the Iker Rabbi Elazar Hamar Kol Haolam Kulam Imeo Kindness Who Shows There. Now Rabbi Elazar says it as a halachic statement, as a scientific statement, whatever the case is. Rabbi Eliezer says that all the precipitation that falls down the world is coming out of the ocean. So what do you want to tell me? He's wrong. Gemara doesn't want to entertain that notion that he's wrong. So I'm Rav Yitzchak Hachabav Shinskashu Merav Yontov Atzkinan. So the Gemara says, okay, well maybe the Bryce is talking about a scenario in which we already saw the clouds before Yontov. So in other words, it was not. In other words, the Gemara is basically saying, you know, you're right. If the rainwater would have started out in the ocean and then evaporated into the clouds and then comes down, so then you're right. So then that water would have been water that comes from outside of Tchum, and you're not allowed to enjoy that water. Here, in this case, in the Brights, we're talking about where we saw the clouds over our heads going into Yontif. So V'dilma hanachaz v'hanach achrin, and another Gemara says, okay, but you know clouds are always moving. How do you know what you're looking at right now and the rain that's falling is from the collection of clouds that we saw going into Yontif? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, Simon, you know how you look up in the clouds, I see a duck, right? You start making images of the shapes of the clouds. Okay, fine. So and then the Gemara gets more fundamental. The Gemara says, look, it may be that these are different clouds, but you don't know. And what are we talking about over here? We're talking about the Isser of Tchum. Tchum is a din derabanan. So now, I'm not 100% sure about a din derabanan. It's a suffix on a din derabanan. We could be mako. V'liknei shvisa ba'avim. So the Gemara says, okay, all well and good. But why don't we make the following argument? Meaning, like I just said to Ben, Tchum is a geographic location. Right, it's a plot, it's a point on the map. Why don't we say that the rain acquires its shvisa wherever the clouds are? The clouds rolled into the city, but maybe they rolled beyond Tchum.
But it's in constant motion, though.
You're giving away the punchline, which is good. But in other words, let me tee it up first. So Tivsha Meneh Dein Tchum L'mal Miyud. Now, just a short couple days ago, Daf Mem Gimel, the Gemara spent a day discussing whether or not Tchum is above 10 Tvachim. Now, obviously, clouds are well above 10 Tvachim. Now, what are you going to tell me, like we discussed the other day, that there's no Tchum above 10 Tvachim? Now, how did we conclude on that issue? We didn't. Right? That was an unanswered question of the Gemara. So over here now, are you ready to conclude? So, De'ein Tchum L'malam Yud, De'yei Tchum L'kne Shvi'is B'avim, So Lo Olamim L'cha Yesh Chumim. So first the Gemara attempts to give an answer and say, look, maybe there is Tchum above 10 Tfachim, but the water in the clouds is not water. It's not water. And so therefore, it can't be Kona Makam Shisa because, I'm saying this halachically, I'm not saying this in terms of natural law, but the water doesn't exist. And so therefore, it can't be Kona Makam Shisa because it doesn't exist. So the Gemara says, very good, Kol Shekein Da'avelu Nolad. So the Gemara says, "That's you can't make that argument halachically, because if water doesn't exist, and now it comes into being, that's Muksa. Or what we don't call it Muksa, we call it Nolad. But between us friends, it's really the same thing. Okay, Nolad is Muksa. So it's Nolad. And so just like the egg which is laid on Yontif, you're not allowed to enjoy on Yontif, Muksa. If the water didn't exist in the clouds halachically, that's also Muksa. Da'asiri, elamaya ba'avim meidna nayad. So now good, now I teed it up, now we can hit it. So the Gemara says, clouds are in constant motion, similar to the boat discussion which we had earlier in the Perek, meaning that you're only kona makam shvisa if you're in a stationary point. Something which is in constant motion, it doesn't get a makam shvisa, and so therefore that's why we're not going to, even if Tchum applied above 10 Tvachim, the water in the clouds is not going to become a makam shvisa. The Gemara rejected the idea that it's not there, It is there. It's just simply not kona makam shvisa because it's in constant motion. Hashadasa sahachi o kainas nami la likshalach mayabokanas nami nami maynad naidi. And the Gemara says, and now that we're here, now we have arrived at this light bulb, this revelation, that something which is in a constant state of flux and motion is not kona makam shvisa. So now we'll go back to the ocean and we'll say the same thing as well. The water and ocean is in constant motion. Okay, it's interesting. Currents, basically. All right, currents of the ocean. So, Vitanya, and look, I'll show you a brisa. Naharsa Moshchem, Omayanosa Novim, Harein, Karagle, Koladam. That when I have rivers, lakes flowing, so therefore they're Ragle, Koladam. Meaning they don't have a Makam Shvisa. Whoever picks it up is going to acquire it and assign it its tchum. Whatever you are, that's what its tchum is going to be. I'm Rav Yaakov Bar. Okay, I'm sorry. Period. End of that discussion. Wonderful. Okay, so now, basically, that was a long question and answer, but let me reduce it now down to basically a couple of very simple sentences. In our Mishnah, according to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, a person falls asleep during Bein Hashmashos. Is he Konez Makom Shvisa? Yeah. Yeah, he is. Okay, why? The answer is because objects are kona the makam shvisa. Ownerless objects are kona the makam shvisa, according to Rav Yochanan Nuri. If ownerless objects are kona the makam shvisa, so is a sleeping person. It's going to be kona makam shvisa. Good. That's it. I mean, that's really the last amud of Gemara in a very condensed nutshell. And now halacha. For the remainder of today's daf, is Memvav. We are on the top of daf Memvav. For the remainder of daf Memvav, we're now going to be discussing who does the halacha follow like. Now, in our Mishnah, what do we have? A machlokus between Rav Yochanan Nuri against the Chachamim. So this is a classic Yachid V'Rabim. I have an individual against the majority. Yachid V'Rabim, who does the halacha normally follow like? Yachid V'Rabim, halacha G'Rabim. Here, not the case. Let's discuss.
How is it decided who the halacha falls? Who decided who the halacha falls?
Well, here, I was going to point to Rav Yeshua ben Levi as being the culprit. But in other words, today's daf, right, of all the daf min shas, today's daf is going to ask your very question, give some answers to your question. Okay, but only some. I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, sorry, let me start off from the beginning. I'm Rav Yaakov bar Idi, I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, halacha ke Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Good. So Rav Yeshua ben Levi, the Amora, Mora of Eretz Yisrael, early generation, right? Same tkufa as Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So he says the halacha is like Rav Yochanan Nuri. So Amalei Rabbi Zerah, Rav Yaakov bar Idi, Beferish mi halacha, Obechlaush mi halacha. Look, Rav Yaakov bar Idi, you heard that from Rav Yeshua ben Levi, but did he say it explicitly, or was it kind of more implicit? So Amalei Beferish mi ali. So no, I heard it explicitly. The my klala. Because we also know that Rav Yeshua ben Levi says that when it comes to Erevin, the halacha always follows a more lenient position. Okay, why? Right, because Erev is the Rabbanan, and on a din de Rabbanan, we have a machlokas, we could follow the more lenient position. So now, it sounds like Rav Yeshua ben Levi is being redundant, because here he says the halacha is like Rav Yochanan Nuri. And elsewhere, he also said, we're always going to take the more lenient position by Irvin. Isn't that a redundancy of Rav Yeshua ben Levi? And the Gemara says, the Gemara is going to answer no. Tarti lamali, am Rabbi Zeret Sricha. Di'i ashmin alachi Rav Yochanan Nuri hava amina ben lakula ben lachomra. Kamash malan alachi kadivri hameko be'erov. So I might have thought, if he just said alach is like Rav Yochanan Nuri, meaning it doesn't matter whether it serves as a kula or whether it serves as a chomra. Chomra, how could it be a chomra? Very easy. Because not only does a sleeping person get chom, which is obviously a kula, he gets now 2,000 amas in every direction, but ownerless items also get a chom, which means that whoever picks it up is limited, is restricted. I can only move this item, I picked it up for the first time in Yontif, I can only move this item 2,000 amas of where this item began. That's restrictive. So if all I had was the halacha being like Rav Yochanan Nuri, that would be true by people, kula, but that also would be true by items, which would be a chumra. Okay, good. So why can't he just simply get away by saying the halacha falls like the lenient position when it comes to Erev? Gemara says, I'll tell you why, that's not enough. One person arguing against another. A group arguing against another group. Fine. But here, Rav Yochanan ben Uri is taking on the world. He's taking on the majority position. So here, even though normally I follow the makel position, but now where it's one against many, so Amalei Rav Labai Mechti Ervin de Rabbanan Mali Yachid B'Makom Yachid Mali Yachid B'Makom Rabim. So Rav says, I don't understand. Meaning, so what? Okay, so it's one person against many. But Erevin is a din derabanan. Is it going to make a difference? Amalei Rav Papa LeRav over derabanan LoShanelach Ben Yachid B'Makom Yachid LeYachid B'Makom Rabim. Of course, it makes a difference. Even by dinei derabanan, if it's one against many, the many usually trump the one. I'll show you how that's true. D'vehatanan, we learned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer Kol Isha Shavru Allah Shal Shalnos Daya Shaita. We go back to the first discussion we had in Masechet Nida regarding this halach of Daya Shaita. A woman's a Nida, so at what point do we say that maybe she's been a Nida earlier and she only discovered it now? Now the position of the Chachamim is that 24 hours prior to her discovery, she also is going to be Mitame. Right? Tumah lemafreya. Retroactive tumah for 24 hours prior to her point of discovery. So the general woman is going to be Mitame tumah me'eis la'eis lemafreya. Okay? It goes back 24 hours. However, if she is clockwork, so then we'll say dayashaita, which means that it's only from the moment of discovery that she's Anida and we don't go back 24 hours. When do we say that a woman is clockwork? So Rabbi Elazar says that if a woman has three Pesach Nidas in a row, so that at that point in time now we say that she is Mochzak and she is now clockwork. V'tanya Maisa V'asa Rabbi K'Rabbi Elazar L'Achashinitzkar Amar K'dayhu Rabbi Elazar L'Smoch Alav B'Shas Atchak. Now one time a halachic question came in front of Rabbi. A woman touched an item within 24 hours where she saw that she discovered she was a Nida. Now, Rabbi Elazar did a little bit of historical background. She turns out that she had three consecutive Pesachs of Nida in a row. So he said, no, it's okay. We're not going to go back 24 hours. Lama Freya. Okay?
There's no concept of suffering for everyone.
I don't want to get too involved in this discussion. You're right. And so Rabbi then relied on the position Rabbi Elazar. And then Rebbe said, that wasn't correct. He felt terrible. Why do you feel terrible? Because look, that's Rebbe Lazar's position, but the vast majority of Tanaim argue with Rebbe Lazar. And so finally, he gave himself some consolation, and he said, look, Kedai hu Rebbe Lazar, l'smach alav v'shas atchak. I shouldn't have paskin like Rebbe Lazar. I shouldn't have paskin like them, but shas atchak. So my lacher sheniskar, ilay malacher sheniskar, dein lacher k'Rebbe Elazar, ela k'Rabbanan. Now, if in this issue the halacha was paskin like the chachamim, so then Rebbe would have to retract his entire psak, meaning he can't just simply say, "Oh, there's Rebbe Elazar out there." That doesn't work. B'shas ratchak heichavikavase, ela delo itmar hilchasal lo k'Rebbe Elazar. So in this particular regard, the halacha was not followed. In other words, there was no psak that was given. There are positions out there. There's a Rebbe Elazar position out there. There is a vast majority of chachamim who argue with him. So lachish and iskar delav yachid palagala ela rabin pligaleha armer kedai Rebbe Elazar l'smachalav v'shas etzchak. In other words, so here Rebbe said, look, if I would have remembered everything at the time, of course I would have went like the chachamim. And not like Rebbe Elazar. But now that I went like Rebbe Elazar, fine. So I don't have to retract my position. But you see over here, by Adin Durabanan, oh, by the way, Tumah Lamafreya. Remember the Gemara's conclusion? Enida, the 24 hours retroactive to her point of discovery. That's Adin Durabanan. That's Tumas Me'eis Leis. That's Adin Durabanan. So we're talking about Adin Durabanan. And basically, Rebbe said, I would go like the majority position. So you see, Yachid v'Rabim, by Adin d'Rabbanan, we're going to go like Rabim. Amr Mishar Shal Rav Avayim La Rav Nachma Yisrael La Rav Avid Rabban Lo Shana Ben Yachid B'Makam Yachid Ben Yachid B'Makam Rabim. Another proof that this is so. V'Atanya Shmo Krov Ano Agash Shiva V'Shloshim Rechoka Einu Ano Agash Ala Yom Echad. Hard to imagine, but right? There was a time in history, not that long ago, that you would have a relative who would die, and you wouldn't find out about it until a month later, 2 months later, a year later. And halachically speaking, you're an avel, but it's a different type of avelus. It's what's called shmua rechoka. Shmua krova is when you learn within the first 30 days after the relative died about the death of the relative. So then you're going to sit shiva shloshim, meaning standard shiva. But if it's a shmua rechoka, so then it's a different type of avelus, only one day of avelus. Ela yom echad. Vezi krova, vezi rechoka, besoch shloshim krova, lacher shloshim rechoka. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So according to Rabbi Akiva, 30 days. V'chacham amar, echashmo krova, echashmo rechoka, nagash shiva shloshim. And the chachamim say, no, there's no distinction. Meaning it doesn't matter when you hear about the death of the relative. Whether a day later, whether a month later, whether a year later, it's shiva ushloshim. So now the Amar Rav Abarachana Amar Rav Yochem and Komakum Shata Mot Yachin Mekel Rabim Machmirim Halacha Kedivrei Machmirim Hamarubim. Normally, on any type of debate, we follow the majority position. Chutz Mizu, with this being the exception, Sha'af Apisha Rabbi Akiva Mekel V'Chacham Machmirim Halacha Kedivrei Rabbi Akiva. Here, the halacha is going to follow like Rabbi Akiva Shmor Rechoka. Now I know psychologists will tell you that. You know, the therapist will tell you that's good, shiva's good and it's therapeutic. But in terms of halacha, Rabbi Akiva obviously represents a kula. So you're not confined to your house and you don't have to sit shiva. And okay, I'm not speaking emotionally, but we're just speaking halachically. Then obviously represents a kula. So once again, you get the sense that this being the exception, but normally on Dini Durabanan, you follow the rabbim over the achid, this being a notable exception. So okay, and obviously the point being made that this is avelus is going to be the unique exception. The rule is yachid v'rabim halachik rabbim, even if it's a din derabbanan yachid v'rabim halachik rabbim. Okay, fine. That was a long run on sentence, but basically, okay. Again, Rav Yeshua ben Levi seemed to have been redundant. He said, when it comes to Erevin, halachik kedivrei hamekel. When it comes to our discussion, a sleeping person, halacha is like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Why did we need both statements? So our first approach of the Gemara is. The approach given by Reb Zera, Tzricha, they're both needed because, again, it's a kula, it's also a chumra. Okay, fine. That was all approach number one. Approach number two, Rav Papa. We're on Mem Vav Amud Beis. Rav Papa Amar Yitzterich, I need both. Meaning, as Rashi points out, he's going back to the two statements of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Why do I need the two statements of Rav Yeshua ben Levi? A, the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and B, we're always going to fall like the Mekel, when it comes to Erevin. So Hani Mila Be'erev Chatzeros Aval Be'erev Tchomim Emalo Tzricha. I might have thought that the statement that the halacha falls like the Mekel by Erevin is Erev Chatzeros. There will be Mekel. Always. But Erev Tchomim, maybe not. Now, generally speaking, I think we made this point earlier. Tchom is a Din D'Rabbanan, but a stronger Din D'Rabbanan. I say stronger, why? So if you remember, it's tied to a pasuk. It's connected to a pasuk. It's not a din d'oraisa. Again, according to some tanaim, it is a din d'oraisa. But it's not a din d'oraisa. But even in the world of derabanan, a derabanan which has an attachment to a pasuk, it's a stronger derabanan, if you will. So I might have thought that the statement of Rav Yeshua ben Levi is by Erev Chatzeres we're always going to be mekel, but maybe not by Erev Tchum. And the Gemara says, and watch. Did not am Rav Yehuda by Medvar Mamorim Be'eriv Tchum Aval Be'eriv Chatzeres Ma'arvin Bein Ladas Bein Shalal Ladas Shezach La'adam Shalal Befanav Bein Chavin La'adam Shalal Befanav. This Mishnah, which really is what we all work with, meaning, did you contribute bread to the Erev Chatzeres? Right, everyone in this room? The answer is, yeah, you did. Okay? You don't remember, right? Okay, so. What we all know, right, we've said this already a number of times, is what the Rav of our community did is, he took matzahs and he gave it on our behalf. Right? Did he ask our permission? Doesn't need to ask our permission. Zachin la'adam shalom b'fanav. Because we all stand to benefit. It's all benefit. And there's no downside. I'm allowed to carry now on Shabbos in our unified Eruv. Tchumim, however, there's an upside and there's a downside. Tchumim is a zero-sum gain. I'll gain on this side by making my Eruv Tchum, but I'm losing on the other side. So it's a zechus and it's a chova. I can't make an Eruv Tchum on behalf of somebody unless he gives me permission. Right? So in other words, again, you see that Eruv Tchum is more stringent than that of Erev Chatzeres. I might have thought that the statement of Yeshua ben Levi were always going to be Mekon when it comes to Erev, that's Erev Chatzeres, not Erev Tchum. Let's do one more. Rav Ashi Amar Yitzderich, Rav Ashi again, is going to try to explain the redundancy of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Sakadat Chamin Hani Milabi Shiyure Erev, yeah, we'll be Mekon when it comes to leftover Erev, residual Erev. Ava B'tzilas Erev, Emelo. But not when it comes to the formation of an Eruv, the making of an Eruv. There is a minimum requirement of Eruv Chatzeres. But that's in the setup. But if there's anything left over, it's fine. Look, we just want to make sure that people understand that there's an Eruv. So you need something. But you don't need a shear, like we'll talk about later on in the Masechta. So in other words, again, by shiur eruv we can be mekel, and maybe like there the halach is going to be like the divrei hamekel. But haschalas eruv, the establishment of an eruv, so there maybe not. Maybe we won't necessarily be mekel.
We'll begin in 5 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes.
Good. So I get a 5 minute break. We're going to stop over here. Okay, so in other words, a really straightforward daf today. Meaning, the halacha is like Rav Yochanan Ben Uri, established. Rav Yeshua Ben Levi says it. Rav Yeshua Ben Levi also said that we're going to follow the Divrei HaMekel when it comes to Erevin. So, why the redundancy? Three approaches. Approach number one is because here in our Mishnah, it's Yachid against Rabim. I might have thought that Rabim will trump Yachid, even though the Yachid is being Mekel. Approach number two is that maybe we're always going to be Mekel by Erev Chatzeres, not by Erev Tchum. That's why I need the redundant statement of Rav Yeshua ben Levi here by Tchum, the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan Ben Uri. And finally, maybe we'll be Mekel for residual Erev, but for the establishment of an Erev, maybe then we won't necessarily be Mekel, and that's why I need Rav Yeshua ben Levi to tell me that the halacha here falls like Rav Yochanan Ben Uri. Okay, we'll stop over here tomorrow. We start a very interesting topic coming up for tomorrow, Klale Hapsak, meaning who do we normally follow? Like Ben asked me earlier this morning, right? Who establishes the rules? So we're going to see an attempt of the Gemara tomorrow to establish rules of who do we normally follow. Okay, you'll see what I mean. Okay, continue for Shlema for Binyamin Zevakon, Mesharon Rivka, for Falls like Avram, Ben Yakira, Avigal, Rabbi Chananya, Ben Akashamar, Rasa Kishpoch, Zaki, Sol, Fiecha, Kerlam, Tar, Mitzos. Shenemar, Nechav, Etzamansi, Koyak, Dil, Taravi, Adir.